You are listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad at Folk Alliance International 2024. I'm sitting with Xanthi Alexis, who is of Greek and Indigenous background. Have I got that right?
You do, yeah.
And what I want to have the opportunity to have a chat with, and I'm delighted to be able to do so, is how music, song, poetry, which poetry is often the lyrics that ultimately end up in music and combined with it, how they are an integral part of culture going back as far as human beings have communicated with each other, and that cultures such as the Greeks, the Native American First Nations, the Irish, and Celts, the Gauls, back down into Africa, into Asia, that there's such a depth and wealth of culture that survives through the tradition of music and song.
Right.
And this is something that is very much part of who you are.
It is, yeah. I think that, you know, both my parents are poets. My father, both my parents are also deeply spiritual. So there was always that flavor in the home and that focus. And for me, poetry was definitely, I associated it with an altered state or a prayer state or an imagination state very early when I would write. I knew that it was an entryway to another state. And then, of course, in my home, which my father left early, so it was mostly my mother's cultures, the Greek and Indigenous cultures that were mainly influential, even though Catholicism also, I think, enters into my whole psyche situation too. Mm-hmm. But most certainly, I initially saw how my mother gravitated to music, and she was doing something more than just listening. She was healing or associating it to the seasons. Or, you know, when we would gather in Indigenous gathering, the drum is so central. And then in Greek, there's these huge, massive texts of writing from these thinkers and these mystics, and she was kind of really excited and turned on by like all of that, and she really relied on education. She got two master's degree was while she was raising us. That was kind of her way to survive, raising us alone. There were five of us, and so she was feeding all of that into our day-to-day life, and I feel very fortunate to have had those things intact, because I don't think it's uncommon that families come to America, integrate into an Americanized culture, and these things are lost, you know? And I do find that with the Indigenous heritage, I think all Indigenous are trying to return to an understanding of what our culture was pre-colonization. That's
on the Indigenous side, I'm aware that I think there's something like 530-odd tribes in the U.S., of which something like 260 are landed, and the other 260 or so are not landed, or would have been nomadic.
Right.
And of course, it's very easy to identify if you're landed with the location, but if you were nomadic, from an Indigenous perspective, your whole cultural being is tied up in nature, in your surroundings, in following food, it's intangible.
And also, I think a relationship to nature, to the skies, and you see this in Greek and in Irish culture too. The skies, the nature is interacting with man, and that is also present in the artistry, the poetry, and the day-to-day life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I have something I've been doing recently. I came across this thesis called Counting the Dead. And it's I kind of had to approach it pretty slowly because these numbers were really important to me in exploring the loss and understanding my grandmother, but also wanting to confront the numbers, because I think part of the erasing of identity is we can't comprehend the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of fathom why the stories are so important to hold on to, like the gravity of the loss. So, I kind of crack open this really intriguing, and I feel to be, from other things I've read, I feel that this is a pretty accurate portrayal of what this person was trying to discover about the actual numbers. And I sit with it, and I process it, and I think it's something that has been helping me actually conceptualize why we say we are still here, you know, and that to me, because I find that when I speak about my grandmother and the amnesia or whatever that we all experience when we're trying to understand a people whose numbers just have deteriorated. Mm-hmm. What I kind of hit when I was trying to understand her is this huge well of grief that I knew I had some sort of amnesia about. There was a part of my psyche that couldn't fathom this had happened when I thought about the number, the massive number. And so the grief that I encountered in her understanding her story as a human being, this grief she carried, brought me to reflecting on the actual loss. Mm-hmm. And going back to the language, the stories, and the importance, I think I there was a depth of the importance that I wanted to reach by confronting the numbers, that even as I share them, people are like, no, and I'm like, no, yes, mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. Populated this mm-hmm. whole place mm-hmm. by a people that is mm-hmm. now, these numbers are 97% gone.
Yes, yes.
And so for me, that activated a sort of maybe a sense of not wanting to speak out of turn or not represent in a good way what my elders are trying to keep intact. And the confronting the numbers inspired me to say, okay, with this reach that I have, here I am talking to you, let's have these conversations mm-hmm. that I think people want to have and reflect on, but the why do we hold these stories, these ways, so dear, and it's because of this massive loss.
Part of it, I think, is, well, that, yeah, but I think you raise so many strands, like, we know so little, that's the challenge to start with, about any of our, what would be, long-term histories, and, you know, we all know the Inca exists, but they're no longer, so there's a culture that was here and is gone, and yet, when we look around the world, and you be it that you look at Chichen Itza in Mexico, you look at Stonehenge, you look at Newgrange, you look at go over to the Middle East, and there are examples of powerful soul searching among peoples thousands of years ago that shared a commonality.
Right. Right. So the Ojibwe, our medicine shield, is so we believe that Crow went out and saw this massive world and all these different people. And so our medicine shield represents what Crow witnessed, which was the many colored nations. So that's why our shield has the white, black, yellow, and red to represent what Crow saw. And it was telling our people of this rainbow nation that existed. And I think we're in a beautiful time where we've connected globally. Like, I really experienced this during the pandemic. Like, first time, I'm sure when the earth was changing and things were happening, people were experiencing chaos or whatever, but like during the pandemic, we were able to communicate with one another, and we have an awareness of each other that's like, we can't forget about this awareness. We have it right here. We know there are people in Australia. I know there are people in Ireland, and we can't unforget. But thinking about these cultures that were pushed out, that were lost, that were colonized, it's like there wasn't that awareness. They were discovering one another with no understanding of language, of lifestyle. It's fascinating to me. But now we have this opportunity to have these conversations, right?
But would you not consider that, given the world we now live in, that those conversations are not happening because there's so much of a distraction on so many different levels? And that is that expectations are created at a level which is in total conflict with being in touch with the inner spirit of who we individually are, who we are collectively, and who we are and how we are connected to Mother Earth.
Well, indeed, I feel very, very fortunate in the work I do in my family's clinic, because I am able to have these conversations with people about the whole person. And I've gotten this beautiful understanding working with so many different types of people, eventually about that core thing, that question of spirit. And I feel like I've been able to have those sorts of exchanges with people that maybe not everyone gets to have. And like you were saying about these symbols that we see throughout the earth, throughout Mother Sophia, Gaia, whatever she is, whatever it is, we see these symbols, and I see them in my practice too. These commonalities, this search for meaning, right? This, and for me, the stories, the indigenous stories, the stories of my Greek heritage, they have pride in their country, but these stories to me are also a link to my spirit, you know.
Right,
but they're informing me about my spirit.
But the reality, to many ways, is that's a minority. You know, the term mass media, the term, or be it social media, you know, the pervasiveness of the alternate narrative far outreaches what is the core human spirit aspect of it.
Yeah.
And when I said earlier on about the creation of expectations, the expectations that are created are in conflict, are nearly in total opposition to those which would be the values that were what were indigenous values,
right?
What were...
Well, because individual survival does not work. It does not work.
No, but I agree. But yet, what is the promoted expectation predominantly in the mass communication world is individual survival.
Yeah. So, but that, I mean, that's why we're sick. That's why we're stressed. That's why we can't get off the fear loop. That's why we are preoccupied with looking for what's wrong next.
I agree 100%. So I think we're saying the same thing, but where I diverge is that, you know, when you talk to somebody in your practice, you're talking on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
And you're competing with someone who's talking on a 1 to 5 million basis.
Mm.
So you're 4,999,099 behind the S ball, the ball before you start, because you're having to deal on a one-to-one. And in order to redress and in some way to recalibrate and revalue, we're all struggling with this onslaught of the creation of expectations,
yeah,
that are totally in conflict with the very core of what you're talking about.
And unrealistic, and I was thinking about, because we took a little drive, there's some really neat graffiti art close by.
Okay.
So we've been trying to go look at a little bit of it, just to get fresh air. And I was thinking about because at the clinic, we do, we see whole families.
Okay.
You know, and so I often will say, you know, we're like, a community, you know, service, right? We are, and we work in sliding scale. We don't turn anyone away. But the reality that we are a really fragile, frayed global state right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think from my mother's example of what she did with her education, what she did with her indigenous, how do I say it? Her ancestral medicine that lives inside of her, that she went into the depths of and is still trying to understand and then facilitate within the community. So creating a small ripple of what was happening within these indigenous societies, that we don't 100% know if it was working.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. I think I can sense from what I've learned and understood that it was certainly working in a way that, like one of the stories my grandmother would tell is that the way we teach, and this really influenced my work in trauma work, in the tribe, if someone had suffered a loss, they would not have their day-to-day expectations. Their responsibilities would be absorbed within the community.
Mm-hmm.
And they were given time,
mm-hmm,
to, my mom always says, to run through the streets screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, well, what, you know, to freak out, to, mm-hmm, truly grieve and process and, mm-hmm, and move into the actuality of what they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of what we do, I mean, in these corporate jobs or whatever, that you're barely making a living anyway, you can't pick up the phone and say, I just suffered this huge loss,
mm-hmm,
and really expect that you're going to be given anything.
Facetiously, I'm going to say, Ms., well, because you've been civilized.
Yes.
I said facetiously, I'm saying, it.
Yeah.
Because in a way, what has happened is that...
That's not civilized, though, you know.
No, I agree.
That's almost funny, but it's like, that's not dignity.
I know, but that's why I'm saying it.
I know.
Because the same applied in, again, we can go look back at a variety of cultures and in various continents where, particularly at a time of loss, the grieving process was something that was an integral part of the human condition.
So the keening, I remember doing a one-act play in high school. I was so fascinated by this. It was an Irish one-act,
uh-huh,
and I became completely fascinated with the keening.
Yes.
And in fact, it inspired not the so a lot of the like long notes that I do are inspired by, you know, my own like Greek and Native American music is vocally incredibly different than what you hear here in American music. It's a lot. There's tones and there's vibrations that you don't hear. And I remember in high school when I heard the Keening, and I was like, whoa! I mean, talk about being with the magnitude of the actual emotion, mm-hmm. you know? And so will you explain to people, well, your listeners are going to know
what keening is, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there were professional keeners.
I want to be that.
But that was in a time when there was the wake, and the wake was a very important part of...
Was it always women?
The keeners, yeah.
Wow.
But the wake was important because it was facilitating the transition, the journey from here to there.
Okay, so yes, I have something cool to share with you about that. So I have an artist residency in Greenpoint in Brooklyn in New York, and it's run by this amazing woman named Sol. She's super dedicated to creating working living spaces for artists globally in New York City.
Okay.
And she's incredibly special. Well, she and I were talking about my work, and at that time, this was about 4 years ago, I had made the decision, I do birth work, but I had made the decision, just because I was working with a family who faced a death, I made the decision to go into death work. And it's actually been some of my most rewarding work is that stage of life. Now I'm so tired I forgot my train of thought.
Transition.
Oh, yes. So Sol, we were talking, so the mothership, she really embodies this whole ship, and she's the captain, and it's kind of, I'll have to explain it more some other time, but it's very magical is really all I can say. And sometimes you get to have a little special breakfast with her where she, it's like a meditation almost, where you sit and you speak and you process about what you're working on, and it's very ritualized. She's just incredibly special, and you know, and but she told me, she said, you're a psychopomp. And I'd never heard this before, and this is a Greek term, and it is someone who walks between the veils. And because we've lost that process of ritualization of our emotional experience, and instead we're denying it, then we're denying all the processes of the body, and then we can't inhabit the body, and so we're only up here, and these bodies are moving around, but we're not actually feeling the impact of what you're talking about, which is that this is not civilized, you know.
But that comes back to what we said a few moments ago, because it comes back to the difference between individual and community, and that the Western world, particularly as a consumer society, is being presented to us with the expectation of individualization, of satisfaction of individual pleasures, needs, or wants, as distinct from needs. The satisfaction of those pleasures and wants at the expense of whatever.
But then we also don't share open, like, let's say a community member might really be struggling behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even have a language for my brother is suffering down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know, like, my brother is suffering down the street, I would have no idea, you know? Right.
Zantin, knowledge is power. Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
So
I've been sitting with that term lately. I've been trying to understand that. I know. I listened to this crazy thing about realm of the gods, and like it was this kind of deep dive into the Greek gods,
uh-huh.
and how, you know, people are starting to wonder, were these Egyptian gods some kind of, I don't know, superhuman or something. And so it was this deep dive about, like, what is the realm of the gods? And one of the things that they said is, it's ignorance. That ignorance is bliss.
Well, there's misnomers in around that, and we'll talk about that.
I mean,
in a bit.
I'm not saying those are my values.
No.
That was just what the conversation was, and it was really interesting to me. It was really interesting because we're talking about, like, fallible gods. Like,
yeah, no, but it's an irrelevancy in that context. But what I'm saying is, like, you're saying, you know, if your brother's down the road, and the awareness of the struggle. Well, ignorance is bliss, because if you are either disconnected from, or choose to be disconnected from, or society disconnects you from, the awareness of what's going on, you're living in ignorance, and there's a bliss about it, because there's the lack of responsibility, of connectivity, of that.
Do you know that, so in my intake, in my practice, I had to include people's COVID experiences. Uh-huh. I couldn't really take on a new person post-COVID and not have an understanding of what their experience was. Because there's a lot to unpack there now. And I was reading materials in a mental health journal that were talking about the actual quantifiable impacts of loneliness and isolation on the human system. And I think people, I've kind of even been noticing at the conference, we were, my partner at the Cello Tree in Nashville, Sarah and I were talking this morning on our graffiti drive. We were talking about there's a softness of the energy, even though it's like everyone is exchanging. It feels softened, and you know, I said, I think people have been truly impacted. I don't think we know how yet. I don't think we have a language for it, but I think there is a sensitivity to the level of withdrawal we went to from.
I think it's interesting you use the word level of withdrawal.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it's interesting, because I think what the pandemic highlighted was the numbing effect that our current life methodology has in disconnecting people from spirituality. And as a result, when you that hammer fell, which says you could no longer engage in these meaningless lifestyle practices, which filled the void appeared.
The people, and I think that confronting ourselves, right, when we don't have a language or a ritualized, ceremonialized system that we've been engaging with since childhood, right, that we don't. We are left without a roadmap, and I think that's, you know, the rare that I had a childhood experience where, you know, I was being raised in an environment where the transitions, the passages, were important. They were focused on. There was a seasonal aspect, a specialness, a sweetness, you know, and but I think about how do people, because so many, you know, when I meet someone that's like, parents never talked about God, I've got nothing. I'm like, from scratch, I'm sensing around to what I'm gravitating towards, which is amazing, because it certainly hasn't always been the way things are, you know. But also, for me, I'm like, wow, that level of having to confront when you have no, you've never been shown any of that life. You've only been shown this externalized expectation, sort of, go here, go here, go here, you know? Hey!
Hey!
Zantam, Fred, we're going to have to wrap.
I know.
We could talk for hours.
Gosh darn it.
Yeah, but thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. It's been fabulous.
If anyone wants to learn more about you, where did they go?
XanthiAlexis.com. I'm on Spotify. I'm on Apple Music. If they wanted to learn more about our healing center, it's Manitou Wellness Center. XanthiAlexis. I think I'm one of the few. XANTHE.
Thank you.
Thank you.